what we're going to do is in this class, we're going to continue with this idea of identification with reference now to the emotions. And then in our next class, we're going to get into, in fact, we're going to work our way towards some meditations and some ways of discovering who you truly are as being independent of the body, mind, and emotions. But we're not ready to go there yet.
Okay.
We'll stay on track for tonight. Try this. Think about your living room at your home. Think of a chair that's in your living room. Now, in your mind is a chair thought. Correct? You are the knower. The chair thought is known to you. Pretty clear? Would any of you say that you are a chair? Because of the presence of a chair thought in your mind, would you say you are a chair? No. Okay. Now, try this. Suppose in your mind, instead of a chair thought, suppose in your mind is sadness. Now, when chair thought is in your mind, you know that the chair thought is in your mind. When sadness is in your mind, you know the sadness is in your mind. When a chair thought is in your mind, do you say I'm a chair? No. When sadness is in your mind, do you say you're sad? Hey, what's going on? There's some real fundamental confusion here. By the way, this isn't a trick. What we are doing now is examining your experience and finding out how our experience trips us up. Our failure to correctly understand experiences can trip us up, can make us suffer. So let's go back to that. Make sure you understand this very clearly before we work with this. A thought arises in your mind. That thought is known by you. That thought comes and goes. You are the knower of the thought. Everything in your mind goes on changing. You are the observer of whatever happens in your mind. Correct? You are the observer of everything that happens in your mind. We had developed this in last week, last class. Whatever happens outside is known to you. Whatever happens inside your mind is known to you. Thoughts are known to you. Perceptions are known to you. Even emotions are known to you. So if you know the chair thought in your mind, no one would say, I'm a chair. What's going on when you get the sadness in your mind and you say, I am sad? We're back to the problem of identification. This is really the problem. Suppose it were possible to disidentify with that sadness. Maybe you've done this. To explore this, let's start a little bit easier. The idea of disidentifying, this is a nice example. You go to a movie, and in the plot, somebody is about to get stabbed. You know, the usual scene, they're in the shower or something, and somebody's about, the hand is sticking out, and that person's about to get stabbed, and how do you feel? Your heart is racing, you feel tense. Why? In a sense, you're identified with the character to some extent. It's the identification with the character that makes you vulnerable to those intense feelings of fear. Suppose you were watching the movie without being identified. In fact, suppose you brought me with you to the movie, which would be a mistake because I hate movies. There are very few things in life that I don't like, but I don't like movies. They're almost always boring. I don't watch them. So suppose, and besides the fact that I would be a little bit of an odd companion in a movie theater, so in several ways. How's this? Suppose I'm sitting next to you in a theater, And I tap you on the shoulder, and I say, remember, this is only a movie. And I do this every minute. Once a minute, I tap you on the shoulder, and I say, remember, this is only a movie. See, these are all highly paid actors, and they're not even very good. And, you know, they're just running around on a set. You can't see, but their camera's right off the, and the lights are, you can't see, the lights are up there, and the microphones, it's all a stage. You just can't see because they don't show you that part of it. And suppose I, every minute I do this to you. Now you're in the midst of the movie, and the hand is coming, and this person is about to get stabbed. Will you have any emotional reaction? None whatsoever. Actually, your only emotional reaction would be to be angry at me for destroying the movie for you. You wouldn't enjoy it at all. Okay. This shows the process of identification. You get identified with the character, and you become subject to the feelings. Now, let's make this a little bit more real. Let's take the problem of sadness. That was fear. Let's take the problem of sadness. Conventionally, we all feel that sadness is undesirable. We don't want to be sad. Who here wants to be sad? Do you like to be sad? Who wants to be sad? But isn't it odd that if you watch a really sad movie, you walk out of the theater with tears streaming down your cheeks, and you say, that was the best movie I've seen in a long time. Correct? What's going on here? Now, I thought sadness is undesirable. Is it that, oh, it's a fake sadness that you have in a movie theater. Is it a fake sadness? If you're watching something sad, this Titanic, everyone watched the Titanic. The boat goes down. Is that a fake sadness? There's no such thing as fake emotions. Emotions are what they are. You feel sad. Now, notice the sadness arises because of identification. If I were to sit next to you watching a Titanic and remind you every minute you're only actors on a set, even you know, see that ship? It's a computer model. And you start explaining all of this, you know, maybe you won't feel sad. No, we're gonna come up to something. If you feel sad in life, what is the solution to this? And this is very important. It is possible we have to back up a little bit and set this up properly. Suppose you feel sad. And suppose you bring in these Vedantic teachings. By the way, watch where this is not going the direction you think it's going. So be patient. Watch, listen carefully. Suppose you feel sad, and you bring out these Vedantic teachings, and you remember what Swami Tadatmananda said, that, hey, sadness is known to me. Just like a chair thought is known to me, this sadness is known to me. This sadness is not me. This sadness is out there. It's just a thought. It's unreal. There's no such... I'm independent of this sadness. This is just some nonsense happening in my head. And poof, the sadness is gone. Does that sound like a good idea? This is dangerous stuff. What I've just described is listed in a DSM-4. DSM-4, Diagnostics and Statistical Manual, Revision 4, is the manual used by psychologists and psychiatrists in making diagnoses. Somebody who considers their emotions to be unreal is suffering from a psychological disorder. Is that what you want? That's one way of getting rid of sadness. Sadness comes. Pull out these Vedantic teachings. I am Satchidananda Atma. I am the conscious observer. I am the awareful witness. The sadness is not real. It's only a fleeting thought. This almost qualifies as mental illness. And it's clearly an unhealthy approach to dealing with emotions, because if you feel sad, there's probably a good reason you feel sad. Besides the fact that we just got done describing how sadness is not the enemy. Who said, we just went through that. Sadness is not in and of itself undesirable. Sadness is a normal part of the human experience. Can you imagine a Mahatma, an enlightened person, being told, your dear friend has just died in an automobile accident? How should the enlightened Mahatma reply? Nothing, it's just his body. You think so? This is a true story. Pujya Swami Dayananda, my guru, one of his friends was this great musician, Maharaja Puram Santanam, a Carnatic singer, who died in a terrible automobile accident in South India. And I was with Pujya Swamiji when he received news of his death. They were quite close. Maharaja Puram Santanam had stayed at the ashram months, had performed for Swamiji many times, had set many of Pujya Swamiji's songs. He set the music, had composed songs based on Pujya Swamiji's lyrics. They were very close. They were friends, and they had been friends for several years. When Pujya Swamiji learned of his death, which was in a very violent automobile accident, Swamiji was visibly shaken when he learned of it. And isn't that what you would expect of an enlightened person, is one who's compassionate, who has feelings, who understands the tragedy and loss, senseless loss, of such a fine musician. Horrible. Then you might wonder, well, hey, if he's visibly shaken, a Mahatma of that stature is visibly shaken by a sad event, then what good is all this Vedantic teaching? Well, 5 minutes after he learned of Maharaja Puram's death, he walked into a lecture hall. 200 people were waiting for him to give a class. He got up and gave a brilliant class. No problem. That's different. Usually people are, when they encounter a sad event or a tragedy, that tragedy weighs them down, leads to deep sadness, depression, lingers for days, weeks, months, for some people, depending on what it is. That evening, Swamiji, I asked Swamiji, well, what happened to Sri Santanam? He described the whole thing that had happened. And at that time, he was okay. Whatever sadness, it came, it passed. If sadness comes and goes like that, it's normal and it's not a problem. It becomes a little bit more like the movie. In the movie, you also feel sadness. When a Titanic sinks and all the people drown, you feel sad. That sadness is acceptable. Other sadness is not acceptable. What is the difference? And the difference is one of conclusion. And please, and this is the bottom line, so please listen carefully. In the movie theater, you feel sad, but you know you are okay in spite of the sadness. Correct? In the movie theater, you feel sad, but you know, it's knowledge. You know that you're okay in spite of the sadness. You know you'll walk out of that theater. You know you're okay. Problem in life, we feel sad and we don't conclude I'm okay. We conclude, oh God, how can I go on living? How can I deal with this? How can I go on another day? That's a conclusion. That's not a fact. Suppose you were able to conclude the same thing as you did in the movie theater. That is, I'm sad and I'm okay. You conclude that in the movie theater. You're sad, but you know you're okay. Suppose you can make that same conclusion in life. I'm sad and I'm okay. In spite of the sadness, in the presence of the sadness, I'm okay. Think of the incredible freedom of life when you make that recognition. Now, this is not something that's just theoretical. This is something that you have to discover. And what we're going to be doing in coming classes is drawing upon teachings and even using some meditation in at least one session to help you see how you are okay no matter what. You are okay no matter what's happening to the body. You're okay no matter what's happening to the profession. You're okay no matter what's happening to the mind and emotions because you are independent of it. It's a matter of self-recognition. We're going to wrap up this session with a delightful story. Let me set up this story. This is a story that reveals how self-recognition, to recognize the truth of who you are, will set you free from suffering. This is a story that's told by many teachers. Swami Vivekananda, it happens, was fond of this particular story. I'll tell one version of it tonight, and then maybe later in our session I'll tell another version of it another time. Famous story of a favorite one of mine, of a lion cub wandering with its mother through the jungle. And in this deep, dark jungle, the little cub gets separated from its mother. Now, this poor little cub in his wild jungle, very alone and frightened. There's a little thing like this. And feeling so frightened and lonely, this little lion cub sees over in a clearing, sees a flock of sheep. And wanting some company, this lion cub wanders over towards a flock of sheep. Generally, sheep run away from lions, except this lion was this big. So the sheep weren't afraid of the lion. This lion cub wandered over amongst the sheep and spent the night with the sheep. The sheep lay down in the grass and slept. This lion cub laid down in the grass and slept. They got up in the morning. The sheep go on grazing on the grass. This poor lion cub is getting really hungry. What does he start doing? Grazing in the grass. And this goes on for years. The lion cub grows up amongst the sheep. What do you think that lion cub would, how would that lion cub consider itself? Now it's a full-grown lion. How would it think and feel and behave? Clearly, it's going to think it's one of the sheep. It's going to be very confused about its true nature. Now, story continues. Another lion happens to be passing through the jungle, unrelated lion. And this lion looks into the clearing and sees this bizarre scene, a flock of sheep with this huge lion standing amongst them. Now, bear in mind that the sheep aren't afraid of this particular lion because this particular lion grew up with them. So even though he's big, they're not afraid of him because he's so familiar. So this passerby lion sees this bizarre scene, a huge lion standing in this flock of sheep, and the passerby lion can't understand what is going on here. Why don't the sheep run away? Why isn't this lion eating the sheep? So the passerby lion wants to investigate, starts approaching the clearing. As he gets a little bit close, the sheep see the lion coming, and they cry out, "Lion, run!" And the sheep scatter. Of course, the lion, there, a confused lion who's in the midst of the flock, he also shouts, "Lion, run!" And of course, he runs faster because he's stronger. He's the fastest one amongst them. And now our passerby lion can't believe his eyes. So why is this full-grown lion running away from me? What's wrong with him? So the passerby lion wants to solve the riddle, goes chasing after the confused lion. Finally, traps this confused lion at the edge of a river. The lion doesn't want to fall into the river. It's a raging torrent. And just doesn't want to fall in. And he's just shivering. And the confused lion says, "Please don't eat me." Well, the passerby lion says, "What are you talking about? I'm a lion. I'm not going, why do you think I'm going to eat you?" And the confused lion says, "Because you're a lion and I'm a sheep." The passerby lion says, "Hey, you're not one of those sheep, you're a lion. Now please take a moment to reflect on this point." It's a fact, right? The passerby lion says, "You're not a sheep, you are indeed a lion like me." Having said that, what do you think will be the confused lion's response? Isn't it odd? You said, "You're a lion." And this confused lion says, "No, I'm not." Really? He would say, "How can I be a lion? How can I be like you? You're strong, you're mighty, you eat animals. I'm just a timid little sheep, just like all those others grazing in the grass. I'm not a lion." Now, just to reflect on this point for a moment, when a scripture or a teacher says, "You are the whole," our response is, "Yeah, right." how can I be the whole? I have all these problems. I'm so inadequate. I'm such an idiot. I've got all of these emotional problems and all of this going on in my life. How can I be full and complete? How can I be divine? How can I be that? How can I be what these great Mahatmas describe? Simply can't be true. Isn't that funny? Of course, when the confused lion says, "No, I'm not," it's not exactly helpful, is it? It would be a little bit more helpful if the confused lion were to say, "How can that be so?" So instead of denying the possibility, maybe give a benefit of the doubt to this other lion. Maybe he understands something that I don't. He seems to think I'm a lion. I don't think I'm a lion, but he seems to think I'm a lion. Why does he think I'm a lion? What does he see that I don't see? This leads to a certain orientation. In the same way, our scriptures say, you are okay in spite of losing your job at Lucent, in spite of your body getting old and creaky, in spite of your emotions flying all over the place every other day, in spite of all of that, you are okay. You are full, you are complete, you are boundaryless, you are the source of ananda, fullness, joy, love. The scripture says that. What should be our response? If our response is, "How can that be?" Where do we go with that? But if our response is, "Hey, this scripture seems to have a view of me which is different, or this teacher seems to understand things differently than I do, this leads to an attitude that we call Shraddha. Shraddha, loosely translated, means faith, but faith is not adequate even as a definition. Shraddha here means a willingness to reconsider our conclusions, making use of a resource, the resource being the teacher, the resource being the scripture. As the story concludes, for the lion merely to tell the confused lion doesn't work, right? Telling doesn't work. You are a lion doesn't work. Obviously, the lion has to make the confused lion discover. The lion has to show the confused lion, or to put it in more precise terms, the lion has to help the confused lion discover its true nature. And he does so. He says, they're at the edge of the water, he says, look at the pond. Look at your reflection in that pond of water. Look at that reflection and tell me, does your reflection look like one of those sheep, or does your reflection look like me? And with this instruction, the lion is freed from his confusion. He's freed from this idiotic assumption that he's a sheep, and he's so delighted, he's freed from all of that timidness and fear that was associated with his prior life thinking he was a sheep. He was freed from all of that suffering. How? Not by being told, but by discovering for himself. To discover, he required to see his reflection in that pond. And what we're going to talk about in the next couple of classes is not talk about. We're not going to talk about anymore. Now what we want to do is discover. So just as that lion discovered who he really was by seeing his reflection, in the same way our task now is for you to see who you truly are, not by looking into a pond, but can we say, and I'm going to use my teacher's beautiful expression, by seeing yourself in the word mirror of our scriptures. He compares these teachings of Vedanta to a mirror in the form of words. A mirror in the form of words, a mirror that reveals to you your true nature. Just as a lion looked into the pond to see who he truly was, what we'll do in the next several classes is use these scriptures, use the words, the language, the teachings of these scriptures, in particular the teachings of Vedanta, to see yourself as you truly are in that word mirror of Vedanta. This is where we'll continue then in the coming classes. So at the end of this class, let's pause and see if you have questions or comments on anything that we've discussed here this evening. Isn't that a delightful story? And you've only heard half of it. You'll have to wait for the second half. We'll get that in the next class. All right. Okay, shall we end with the short prayer? Repeat after me, please. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah. Sarve santu niramayah. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu. Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet. Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya. Asato ma sadgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma hamritam gamaya. Mrityorma hamritam gamaya. Together. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.